Hi, everybody, and thanks for joining our weekly podcast. I'm Robin Lewis, founder and CEO of The Robin Report, which, by the way, we view as much more than a daily report. It really is a knowledge platform from which we communicate thought leadership on various strategic topics. Yes, through these reports, but also these podcasts, as well as the webinars and hopefully live events in the future. So along with our chief strategist, Shelley Cohan, who is a professor at FIT and Syracuse University, we welcome you to our weekly podcast, the topic of which is retooling and speeding up the retail model. So Shelley, this is a big one, and I'd like to start with a brief kind of historical context, which I think will actually give a little bit of context to help understand the larger picture here. In my co-authored book, The New Rules of Retail, we reviewed what we defined as the three waves of retail. Wave one, I don't know, roughly 1700 to 1950, if you will. And these dates, by the way, are not precise. They're just periods of time and the characteristics of the marketplace. But during that period, we had mainly moms and pops and general stores.
Right.
They really dominated because 60% of the country resided in rural areas during those years. So early in that wave, the only department stores were in cities, which consumers would spend hours traveling to and would then spend, you know, the whole day in that wonderful store, complete with a fancy restaurant. So on to wave two, which was post-World War II, and this was 1950 to roughly 1980, this country experienced the most explosive growth anywhere on the planet in all of history in this country. In 1954, we built the interstate highway system, and 4,500 regional malls have been built across those highways and, you know, regional areas. There were 5,000 department stores. And then in the mid-60s, Walmart, Kmart, and Target were launched. So, and then this was followed by the big box category killers, like, Bed Bath & Beyond, I think at the time, or, you know, Toys R Us, et cetera. Anyway, up to this point, retailers bought products from wholesalers, or they were selling their own wares to a certain extent. They determined the pricing. They distributed the goods to physical stores, and they would replenish as needed. You know, a very simple wholesale to retail model. Then, of course, the e-com boom of the 1990s started to change this model in fundamental ways, as we know. Initially, the retail model coming out of the late 90s was set up with stores and e-com kind of running siloed businesses, in other words, separate.
Right.
Retailers realized that a more synergistic approach would prove more profitable and drive more loyal customers. So then omnichannel was born.
Well,
you take it from there, Shelley.
Well, you remember, Robin, in 2021, one of our top 10 ever listened to podcasts was called Wholesale Retail Model is Dead Man Walking.
Yes, I do remember that.
Yeah.
Were right.
That's right. So while the model was slowly changing over 300 years, when e-com and omnichannel hit, it accelerated it really quickly, especially with the advent of technological advances. And actually, Best Buy, one of the category killers, Best Buy is attributed with the first omni-channel strategy, so to speak, by really having this customer-centric approach. And the reason that they went in that direction was in an attempt to compete against Walmart, who started selling electronics. This is back in the early 2003. But omnichannel marketing really came a few years after that. So this whole shift pressed retailers to really change the retail model and the infrastructure behind the scenes to really better understand inventory holdings across the multiple channels, be able to distribute products precisely, right place, right time, right quantity, right price.
And so, your retailers are finally getting this synchronized strategy working in the first two decades of the 21st century. And keep in mind, Shelley, what it took retailers, to actually develop in 300 years, starting back in the 1700s, they were able to do in 30 years near the end of the 20th century, thanks to the technology advancements. Then, of course, the pandemic hit and retailers shifted the strategy like in a nanosecond. There probably has been 30 years of innovation and change crammed into these last 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
But, supply chain still operated in its old framework, and many companies in the industry were literally brought to their knees, forcing a monumental change in the retail model. And here we are, Shelley, and, the business model is growing even more complex. I've never written, spoken, or thought so much about supply chain as I have in the past almost 3 years, right?
Yeah.
And unbelievable. And it is exactly what we predicted in our second book, Retail's Seismic Shift, that we are in the distribution century. So let's get into what is happening now and will be happening in 2023.
Well, I definitely agree, Rob. For the past few years, I'm going to say all retailers have spent way too much time thinking about supply chain.
Yeah.
But here's what they are doing. So one big thing is retailers are realizing that inventory holdings are too heavy. There's too much capital investment in the amount of inventory that's being held by retailers. Yep. So whether this means there's too many SKUs, there's too much purchased in advance, so 9 to 12 months out, so, merchandise is in the pipeline, or if there's too much inventory in the wrong place. Just overall, there's too much inventory out there. And the second big key is having visibility to where that inventory is even more complex than it's ever been.
Yeah.
But also, Robin, it's never been more important. So we'll talk about this in a second. And the last point I kind of want to make is that in the past, inventory is purchased ahead of the consumer buying the product. So let's say 6 to 9 months out. So if you think about a traditional retail planning cycle, and although we've seen that production timeline get reduced to as little as 6 to 8 weeks, think, fast fashion, Zara, H&M, we're still procuring inventory before or while demand is hitting. But Robin, now, today, retailers are being tasked with reacting to real time, right now, quick shifts in consumer demand. So products demanded now, ready to purchase near real time. So if you think about TikTok as an example, a TikTok video goes viral and now retailers have to figure out how to back into the inventory.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Really gets more and more complex. Or when, in your last example, when the customer does an about face, like, what happened in the pandemic, stores had the wrong inventory in the stores, online, in the pipeline, and in production. So when that consumer demand shifted overnight, retailers were caught, off guard, and they are still reeling with the impact of this problem. It's not over yet. So when you have CEOs talking about SKU rationalization and inventory assortments, this is a tremendous problem that retailers have not been able to get a grasp on. you know, the consumer is more powerful than they've ever been. We talk about this ad nauseum. And if retailers cannot figure out how to get the supply and demand cycle right, they'll continue to see the bottom line negatively impacted. We know that retailers today have too much inventory and they're building new models to better assort and distribute relevant products to the individual markets that they serve. Yeah, and in a more profitable manner. Again, it goes back to optimal, most efficient and effective distribution.
Right. And, you know, retailers are really thinking about a few things in terms of inventory and consumer demand. So first, when looking at inventory, they're going beyond this wholesale to retail model. They're actually looking at concessions in physical stores. So what we now call strategic partners. 100 years ago, Robin, we used to call it leased agreements, which was a legal contract, very legalese. And then we started moving to the terminology of concession, which is the right to use space. And now we're using terminology like strategic partnership. So typically the vendor owns the inventory, the retail offers a greater assortment to their consumer without the inventory investment and its risk.
And that risk is a big deal. And in these strategic partnerships, there really is more collaboration on other aspects of the business. You know, for example, Ulta Beauty and Target worked together on the store design and in using the partnership to further both of their loyalty programs. So there is more collaboration in marketing as well, which helps with both of the brands. So, you know, Nordstrom uses its strategic partnerships to create exclusive products, which helps gain deeper loyalty with its core customers.
That's right, Robin. The other thing that we're seeing, which is interesting, is we're seeing more pop-up shops within stores. So while these may not be a long-term strategic partnership that lasts over many years, but it's a great and quick way to introduce differentiated product to an existing customer base.
Yep.
So for example, West Elm last year had these pop-up shops with local businesses. They called it West Elm Local. So this actually capitalized on two trends. One, localization of product curated for a very specific market, and really bringing in newness to the assortment mix. Mm-hmm. Madewell had a pop-up shop with ThredUp, which makes sense based on both of the brand ethos, and Nordstrom's did a pop-up shop for a short period of time with Allbirds. So retailers should also be thinking about pop-up shops for local charities or communities. There's been a bit of a rise for doing pop-up shops for not-for-profit organizations as well.
Yeah, you know, just as an aside, I've been reading lately about Walmart's initiative with their pop-up program, and they're allowing much smaller businesses onto their platform or in their stores to lease space and sell. Because as you know, for a long time, you might have a great product, but if you couldn't service the scale of Walmart in terms of delivery and inventory and so forth and so on, you just couldn't, they could not be a customer of yours. You weren't big enough, but now they're also allowing these pop-up shops. Anyway, so retailers, you know, are also layering in inventory assortments by added online marketplaces to their existing website and also in their physical stores as well. I just mentioned, this allows again for the retailer not to own the inventory, but still offer a broader assortment of products, not to own it again, that whole risk thing we just talked about. Macy's has a strategic partnership with Toys R Us in their stores, but also they have the Toy Giant as a marketplace on their website.
Absolutely, Robin. And I'm just going to follow up on something you said. When I was director of logistics for Macy's West, we must have had a 300 plus page manual for vendor compliance, meaning that if a vendor couldn't meet everything in the requirements, they couldn't sell at Macy's. And that's a huge change. It's a big shift.
There you go.
It's great.
And, you know, if Macy's was how many pages?
I don't know, over 300 pages of
requirements. How big Walmart's must be.
So marketplaces have really grown tremendously even before the pandemic. And like many things with the pandemic, it really accelerated. So Walmart had less than 10,000 third-party sellers pre-pandemic. So before the pandemic. And then at the end of 2021, they had 130,000 third-party sellers. So they went from 10,000 pre-pandemic to 130,000 at the end of 2021. They were adding like 5,000 new sellers per month. So
they're going to catch up to Amazon. You know, there have been a lot recently. In fact, they're in trouble, not huge trouble, but Jassy's got a lot of issues there that he's having to deal with. So Walmart, in the meantime, is not slowing down at all. Anyway, go ahead.
They're really not. So if you look at that, you know, 130,000 plus third-party sellers, you compare that to how many stores they had, you know, they only have about, you know, close to 4,800 stores. So that's just a huge, you know, difference in terms of being able to assort and distribute products. So when you look at what these retailers are doing to really minimize owned inventory, both in stores and online, and looking for vendors to really fill in the gaps of assortment. So in stores with concessions and pop-up stores and online with marketplaces.
Yep.
So one of the biggest challenges with this kind of new model is getting the marketing programs in sync with now this more complex model. So if you think about it, coordinating the marketing efforts across all these distribution platforms to coincide with product availability, it just requires a huge cross-functional effort, both internally within the company and externally working with all the vendors. And we know, Robin, marketing tentacles are many and varied, especially when you throw in social media, advertising, digital marketing, content development, website performance, SEO, SEM, et cetera.
And on and on. You're so right. The world has become and retail has become much more complex. And Shelley, and the other challenge, however, is making sure the retailer has visibility into the inventories across the various channels so that they ensure they can meet the consumer demand of right product, right place, right time, right price, et cetera. So preemptive distribution, you've heard this before, is now an imperative. So here's the message to retail leaders to think about in your next strategic meeting. Think not just how you distribute to customers directly. Identify the hundreds, maybe thousands, of other distribution platforms that also connect with your consumers. Then reach out to them and enjoy the incredible value you have just unlocked. Distribution always overrules, and we're seeing it explode here. So very exciting time, Shelley.
Oh, it's so exciting, Robin. You're absolutely right. For our listeners, you can find more of our podcast on Apple, Spotify, Buzzsprout, and of course, therobinreport.com. Look for us on YouTube where we broadcast our podcast. And please follow us on social media, link in with us for the latest thoughts about the industry.
And I want to get in here to thank all of you again for coming, and hope you learned something as I have. Every time we do these, Shelley and I both learn a lot. So like I say every week, if any of you have something in mind that you would like Shelley and I to cover, please send me an email. It's Robin, R-O-B-I-N, @therobinreport.com. Thank you all again.